Welcome to a special episode of Washington Insider. I'm Tammy Haddad. It's special because my guests have reached great heights in service to the nation through their positions at the Bush and Obama White House. You probably don't know their names, but they've been the silent voice to execute some of the most important political and diplomatic events. Jeremy Bernard was President Obama's social secretary, and Lee Berman held the same position with President George W. Bush. What is delicious about this book, for not just people in Washington, but anyone trying to advocate for a cause or their kids' school, what is delicious is they are revealing their best practices to make all our lives better. The book is called Treating People Well, The Extraordinary Power of Civility at Work and in Life. Welcome, Jeremy Bernard. Welcome, Lee Berman. And I have promised the listeners all the White House dirt that the National Enquirer doesn't know. Who wants to go first?
Oh, thank you. We're happy to be here.
Yeah, this is a thrill. You want to go first? You want me to go first?
You go.
I don't have any good gossip for you, but I'll just say that this is the book that we wish we had had when we started the job.
Why?
Because a lot of the things we talk about were learned. And, you know, I think my biggest regrets are, why did I behave that way at this? Not necessarily at that job, but just in my past, I think, that was too emotional. I was too quick to make a reaction. And so these are common sense, but it really helps having them right in front of you so you can practice. Because right now, it is really easy to have bad behavior. Bad behavior is contagious. And so we're trying to put the point on that you can make it much better by being nice, and in reverse, it makes you happier.
So Lee, did you throw out that title, Jeremy's title, Bad Behavior? That's dangerous.
No, well, originally we were thinking about calling the book Lies, Excuses, and How to Get Away with Everything, since it was going to be about Washington and what we learned there. But Jeremy, who's a nicer person than me, thought that that was a little pessimistic.
Oh, come on. Not these days. Not these days. And by the way, we'll get to the Trump White House later. But Lee, let me start with you. You worked with President Bush. You worked with Vice President Cheney. Why don't you start us there?
Cheney's were great to work for. They are a lovely couple. They're very quiet, serious Westerners. I knew nothing about government service when I went to work for them. And I worked in a little office at the back of the vice president's residence and shuttled to the White House every day to do my White House duties as well. But it was basically like being in their house and on top of them all the time. And I always felt like it was a bit of an invasion of privacy, but that was part of my job, to be there whenever they needed something.
And you were there on 9/11, right? You were with them.
Yes. Actually, on September 11th, I was walking into the White House for a meeting when they evacuated us. And I just innocently got in a cab and went back to the vice president's residence, where the Secret Service agent looked at me and said, "What are you doing here?" And I said, "Well, I came here because they don't want me at the White House." And he said, "There's a plane in the air. You need to go as far from all of these places as possible." And I went home, and then we spent the whole day, because I live not far away, having friends and other people who were trying to get out of downtown come to our house and just stay at our house until they could get home.
I bet that was the hardest day, of course, for the whole country. But you didn't know what was going on with your colleagues at the White House, right? And it sounds like they were saying the plane is coming this way, or it could be.
And the worst thing that happened that day was that my children, who are in school at the National Cathedral, had heard the television at school, and that there was a false report that the White House had been hit. And my older daughter at the time was, I think, about 14, and she quietly left her school. She went and picked up her sister, her younger sister, at her school, and talked her way past a series of adults to say that they were leaving. And my husband found them walking home. And we asked her later, why did you do that? How did you manage that? And she said, "I just thought I needed to be at home." Wow. And we thought it was kind of amazing for a young girl to be able to pull it together and go do that.
And as I recall, the Cheneys went into the bunker, right?
Well, yeah, they traveled a lot in that period of time. And it was funny because I remember there would be these sudden afternoons where we had to get them packed up and out and be gone very quickly. And one day I was standing there as we were packing them up, and we were packing the extended family because the grandchildren were there too. And I saw the vice president and his son-in-law come down, and they were carrying shotguns. And I looked at the agent and I said, "What's going on?" And he said, "Oh, they're just going to be doing some skeet shooting this weekend."
Whoa. That's not good. That's not good. So then when did you switch over from the vice president to the president? And how did you get that job? Did the president call you up and said, hey, come on over here, Lee?
No, I spent a year as a social secretary for the Cheneys and about a year and a half working as Mrs. Cheney's chief of staff. And then I worked on the Bush reelect. And then I really thought I was done. And then soon after the reelection, Mrs. Bush's chief of staff, Andy Ball, called me and asked me to come in and interview for the job, which really surprised me. I really thought I had finished.
And what did you think? Did you think all of those people in high school who didn't talk to me, I can now not invite them to the White House? And all those people that have been nice to me over the years, they're going to be at the top of the list.
Well, no, it was actually a dazzling experience. I'd never been in the residence before, I don't think. And, you know, you go up and there is that enormous fanlight window that you see in Veep and House of Cards. And Mrs. Bush had this very comfortable living room area. And I didn't know her. And she welcomed me and she said, I have that same suit that you're wearing. And it was like a little thing that we had in common. And then we started talking about food and flowers and all the changes she wanted to make. And I could see that she had a real interest in the hospitality side of things, and I did too. So it was a good fit from the beginning.
And how did you get in there, Jeremy?
It's a good question. I was at the time working for the ambassador, U.S. ambassador in Paris. And it was a great gig. I was living in Paris, and I thought I was set for the next several years. And then I was there, I think, about 2.5 months, and I got a text from the First Lady's chief of staff saying, would you throw your hat in the ring for this job? Because Giuliana was leaving to go, my predecessor, Giuliana Smoot, was leaving to go work in the campaign, the reelect. And I was like, yeah, I'd throw my hat in the ring. I'm not going to be the person they pick for that. I don't know that much about entertaining, you know, like what I thought that job was. And when I came to I flew to Washington, met with all the senior advisors one by one, and everything went great. And then I went over and I met with Mrs. Obama, and I said to her right away, you know, I don't know flowers. I don't know China. I'm really not certain I'm the right person for this job. And she said that you'll have people to help you with that. I need someone with a good political sense and knows how to handle difficult situations and get more people in the House. And so I truly didn't know how likely it was I would get the job. I went back to Paris. I didn't hear anything for about 2 weeks. And then I got some paperwork. They said, well, just in case, would you fill out this additional security paperwork that's necessary for the White House, which I did and then found out. But even though I'd known the Obamas because I started working on the election in 2007 from the start.
Right. So you were one of the earliest supporters living in Los Angeles.
Living in Los Angeles, raising money for Obama and some Senate candidates. And it was, at the time, people would say, why are you doing that? Hillary is going to win. You know, it's not even a contest. Why is he running? And it was one of those rides you really couldn't have guessed that it was going to turn out the way it did. And it was fun the whole way.
And Lee, were you a big supporter, political supporter? I mean, I know you
Yes.
and your husband Wayne were in politics for many years. But as I said to Jeremy before we started, you know, all these years, I always talked to Wayne. I never got to talk to Lee. What a waste of time. I should have been talking to Lee. She's got much better stories. She's funnier. She's beautiful and kind and generous.
Well, thank you. We always were Bush supporters. My husband worked for George H.W. Bush. And so it was kind of a natural progression. And we didn't do it consciously, but it was almost like it was my turn because he'd been in 41 and I went into 43.
Okay, so you're in the White House, you're in charge, and for those who don't live in Washington, they probably don't know how important this job is. Everyone comes over and sucks up to you. They want to be your best friend. They invite you to great parties, all just in case they could slip onto your list to be at a state dinner or reception. Lee, I have to start with you, because the President Bush had a lot of popularity, and then he had really a rough time. Now, you were there a little bit more in the rough time, but still, the White House invitation, there's nothing better. All right, who sucked up the most, and what did they try to do?
You know, I don't remember one individual being particularly extreme. I can certainly remember stories from past social secretaries. For example, Lyndon Johnson's social secretary, Bess Abel, was approached by a man who asked to be allowed to attend the dinner for the King of Norway and his wife. And he told her that his wife was dying and it would mean everything if they could just come to this one event. And so Bess went and talked to Lady Bird Johnson, and Lady Bird said, get them in, even if they're sitting on the very fringes of the room and maybe partway out the door, we have to do this. And so they were invited and they came and it was lovely. And then Bess would see this couple, you know, a couple of times a year for the next 30 years.
30 years.
And she warned us about this, you know, when the social secretaries get together, and she said, you know, don't fall for that I'm dying gambit.
Oh, my. Jeremy?
You know, I got a lot of people felt like that. Instead of sucking up, they would complain to me either that they hadn't been to the White House, hadn't been enough, or they didn't see the Obamas enough. So, and even now, in California, sometimes I'll run into someone, they say, you know, I only got to the White House once, or I never got to the White House. And I'm like, well, you know, it really wasn't my house.
I'm
not president. And I didn't, you know, certainly no one went and got a list and scratched you off. But you constantly, it's very tough to fulfill all the wants that are out there. And it was really tough, and both Lee and I experienced this, after the Clintons, because the Clintons were so good about not just entertaining, they stayed for the, you know, for a long, they Bill Clinton got energy from that. That wasn't President Obama.
President Obama famously was, let's be honest, he didn't love those events.
He didn't love the photos. His deal was, let's get the job done, and this was a necessity, but not his favorite. But it was, it was a constant challenge. You know, I used to say, I'm a progressive Democrat. I love President Obama being in the White House. As a social secretary, sometimes it's a little difficult.
Well, you know what's funny about both of your presidents? If you met them, they looked right at you. With most presidents don't do. They would see you. I only remember that because President Obama, once I took my kid to the White House for something, and then I was there only a few weeks later, and he looked at me like, you were already in the line, girl. What are you doing back?
Funny.
Right? But the point is, they both really looked at people and engaged. Is that as unusual as I think?
Well, they were really, it's unusual that someone's that good at it. I mean, even though it might not have been his favorite thing, he was good at that, and so was she. So that's where it's different. I used to have people say to me, oh, I understand that they don't entertain me as much, but I need to be there. I mean, they want me there because they thought, because they were so nice, that they were close friends and that they should be at everything.
Well, and to go back to what we were talking about how personally people take those invitations, at the time that I was working, I never, ever took anyone off a list. I often added people, but there were so many others who looked at those lists and they were the ones taking the names off, but sometimes I would take the hit. For example, I remember going to dinner once at the Palm, where my picture has been because I've been living here for the last 150 years, and someone had forked my face, and I thought, this can only be about an invitation. So they moved my picture.
I'm sorry to laugh. They moved your picture up.
I'm very jealous. I don't think I've had...
I've been forked.
Forked, yeah.
Oh, my God. But what you did have, Jeremy, is one of my favorite White House stories, if I may tell it. You'll tell the rest of it. I don't think Lee has heard about Megyn Kelly and her husband. This must have been 2015 before she became...
2014.
The biggest star in cable news. She was there with her husband. I was there with Daniel Lippman from Politico. And he's a young man, new on the scene, and I invited him as my guest, and I was introducing him to TV people because it was the TV night. Those were the years where there was a TV night, mm-hmm. print night for reporters. And I introduced him to him, and we ended up in line. And you should actually tell about the line that people are probably thinking, what are you talking about, the line?
Right. So people line up, guests line up to get a photo with the president and first lady. Depending on the event and the size, depends on the room. The first time I ever went to the White House, it was really amazing because it was early Clinton days and they did the photos in the Blue Room and you stood at the door of the Blue Room. So when they called your name, there was actually a pause. I mean, it's like you had all this attention and then you went and got your photo. But it took a lot of time. So when we had a lot of people, we'd usually do it downstairs in the diplomatic room. And people line up and there is a military aide that gets, make sure that, and you write down your name and contact information so they can get the photo to you. And the military aide makes sure he says your name correctly, said yes, then says the Honorable, you know, Dan Small or whatever, and his wife, Emily. And then they get their photo. And then there's another military aide, usually someone kind of big, but a military aide that is called the pull. And that is if someone's talking too long or staying over their stay, which was really short, they would slowly move them out because they were the bad cop.
Okay, so Lee, we're in line, okay? And they're ahead of us. And Megan says to me, I can't even believe we got invited tonight. I've never been to one of these. What do we do? And I, being helpful, just said what Jeremy said. You line up, you come around the bend. It's really fast. You know, you just stand, you pose, and you get out. And she said, well, should I prepare something? And by the way, we're like snaking up the line. I'm like, prepare? This is 4 seconds. And Daniel says, oh, well, we'll meet you afterward and you'll tell us what happens, right? Because this is a Fox News star at an Obama White House event. Right. Okay, so we line up, we get in there, and Jeremy, tell him what happened.
You will actually probably remember the line.
Better, I got the line. So, all right, I'll do the line.
Yeah.
So he, President Obama says, how do you like the house? And Megyn Kelly says, we'll be living here in 4 years. And then they get whisked away, the pool. They take
him
out.
Right, they have to pull.
And then Daniel and I are waiting in the other room, you know, in the China room, the great room. And they don't come over to us. They sort of snake off into the corner. And so Daniel, because he's, you know, 23, runs over. Hey, what happened? And Megyn turns around and says that. And we're horrified. I was horrified. I'm like, oh, my God, I can't believe you said it. Okay. But this is how, well, tell what happens next. And then I'll get the
During the photo lines, each once in a while, we would stop the photo line so that the president, first lady could relax, have a glass of water. You know, take a moment. And when that happened, not long after, the president said, did you hear what she, because there was someone also from the communication shop, did you hear what she said? That she's going to be here? That it's going to be her house? He goes, why would someone say that? And of course, I went around telling everyone, well, you know, Tammy put her up to it.
Oh, you're so bad. But actually, Megyn Kelly went on Jimmy Kimmel the next night and told the story that she actually said this to the president. She told it on herself and said, I can't believe I said something like that. I'm so embarrassed. She was so smart. All right, back to Lee. Let's talk about members of Congress. Now, members of Congress, they're the elite of the elite. How do they handle being at the White House? How did you handle them?
Well, there is a sense of entitlement among many members, and they were always the most difficult group to have because they have expectations. And there are two events for certain that members are always invited to every year, the Congressional Picnic and the Congressional Ball. And it would always surprise me because they behave differently from other guests. They would come up during a party and say, why aren't there any shrimp? I thought there'd be shrimp and lobster. Or they would complain about the fact that they showed up at the gate with 10 guests and we had to wait while the Secret Service cleared them in. Well, of course, the Secret Service needs to know some basic information, and just because a member of Congress shows up with 10 people doesn't mean they're automatically okay to come in. And so it was always a challenge, and it used to surprise me at the Congressional Picnic, which is always on a day that's horribly hot, and everyone's uncomfortable, but they're excited to be there, and people would always get overserved, and you'd see people throwing up in the bushes. And
at the White House?
Oh, and you'd see, Jeremy actually has another concurrent story of something like this. And you'd see people walking off with the centerpieces and mobbing the First Lady and the President for hours. And it's great that they wanted to shake hands and all of that, but it was just too much of everything.
And just to add on that, what was really interesting to watch was who it was that waited and brought their whole family to make sure they shook the president's hand and said something, it was usually like those who? That were most critical of that administration. So when there was a dinner for Shimon Peres for the Medal of Freedom, and the Clintons were there, and it was in the summer, and at the end of the dinner, everyone is gone, except for, of course, the Clintons, because Bill Clinton is talking to everyone.
Yeah, they're fine.
And he said, you know, can I go over and talk to the military, you know, the military band? Of course. And then and Hillary looks at me and says, are you ready for a summer break? Is this the last biggie? And I said, no, I have the congressional picnic next week. She goes, oh, those are the worst, aren't they? I said, all the people that are most critical are the ones. She goes, always. The people that wanted our head, for some reason, wanted a picture with their family. And so it was always interesting to see that.
Not the food tray story.
The what?
Remember the food trays that someone thought?
Oh, yeah. There was a congressman that was overserved. And that in itself is not unusual or a crime. But as we opened the gates at the end of the evening for them to head back out, I noticed he was veering off and going to one of those metal tray carts, you know, that are tall. And I realized he thinks that's an outhouse or
a porta potty.
And so I run over and say, no, that's not. And so he then just walked on out. But yeah, it was, I mean, there was a part of me that wanted to see if he did it.
Right,
but I thought that would, that probably
that
was
would
not.
That would be a story. That'd be a whole other book.
A whole new book on that one, yeah.
Lee, what about the staff? I mean, you've got the chefs, the florists. I mean, isn't that difficult too, managing them? And didn't you guys have some issues with staff along the way? I guess you both have.
I think we always do. I mean, the staff, I've remained friends with many people on the resident staff. They're some of the most wonderful people and supportive people I've ever worked with. At the time that I first started at the White House, there had been an executive chef who'd been there for some time, and they had been working with him, but they just weren't really clicking. And Mrs. Bush, when I came in, said, please work with him and see if you can get him on a more natural kind of food phase. And it wasn't working out. I'd go downstairs with a load of catalogs and cookbooks and things, and he'd say, that's a Martha Stewart thing. That food is photography food. That's not how the food ever looks. I'm never going to do anything like that. He was completely resistant. So after 3 or 4 months, the chief usher, who was his boss, decided that his attitude was such that he really should go. So he called him in and said, we'd like you to resign and we will give you full pay and a great reference. And he promptly went to the New York Times food editor, Marion Burroughs, and said that he'd been fired by me, a Dolce and Gabbana pantsuit wearing socialite.
Whoa.
And, you know, you have to remember, I was a housewife until 2000. And suddenly I'm in the press and there's this horrible fake news. And I was crushed. I was so embarrassed. And I went through that whole day at work feeling awful. And at the end of the day, I was seeing out a number of guests from the family residence because the president and Mrs. Bush had had about 20 people for dinner. And the president, whom I barely knew at that point, came up to me and said, hey, I hear you fired the chef. And he started to laugh. And I realized he must have noticed that I was moping around. And he was kind enough to come over and try to lighten the load and say something to help me put it in perspective. And it did. And it kind of started, it showed me what kind of person he was, but it made me really appreciate him for making the effort.
There are many reports of how popular the Bush family, both Bush presidents, family were with the White House staff, that he was their favorite. But how does the staff feel about President Trump? Have you guys heard anything?
I haven't heard a lot. The ones I have talked to have been very positive about it. That is from a couple of sources that I actually ran into when I was in D.C. last. And I said, how's everything going? And they said, great. You know, it's really good.
Well, President Trump has had staff.
He's used to it.
And he brings people in and takes photos. You can see, you know, you see the photos online and it's really engaged.
Yeah.
And how is Ricky Nasita, the current social secretary, doing? I know you guys have your secret society meetings and you won't reveal anything, but how do you guys think she's doing?
I think she's doing really well. You know, full disclosure, I recommended her. I've known her for many years and worked with her. She's a very, very capable fully professional individual. She was not involved in politics before, but it doesn't matter. And I can tell already from some of the ways that the resident staff talk about her that they like her.
Yeah, I got that same feeling, was that they really liked her. And they, she would joke and say, "I'm your favorite, right?" And I said, "Well, that's just while you're here that they say that." But I think they really, really work well with her. And as Lee was saying, the White House resident staff is really great. They're great to work. There was always a bump in the road, as there is with anyone. I used to often get from one of the ushers, "Well, we've never done it that way before. We've never done that." And I was like, "Well, I understand, but this is their house and this is what they want to do." So there was always a kind of a battle with what they thought was tradition and the way things ought to be and being a little more modern.
Speaking of modern, President Obama and First Lady Michelle Obama's birthday parties are legendary. Can you take us inside those events?
Well, they had a number of private, what were called private parties, which is, first of all, they paid for them. That was, had to come out of personal funds. And it was not something that was open to the press or that there was any coverage of it.
Until now.
Until now. And it got to the point as more and more people, or virtually everyone, had brought phones with cameras, that we started having a camera check, like a coat check, because Mrs. Obama wanted people to enjoy the moment and not be so focused on the photo or the video, and also didn't like people putting it on, saying kind of like, "Ha ha, look where I'm at," because that's when we often got the calls after something like that. They say, "Oh, I saw on Facebook such and such is at the White House."
Well,
why'd
some people snuck them in, right?
Yes.
Like Beyonce, anyone with a single name.
Yes, there was, and there was also a a reporter that, or anchor that, from a cable news that did it, and so, but we, it was always usually the same people that did it. But it was, you know, I thought it was too bad because I thought that showed a lack of respect for the president and first lady and their wishes to have this as a private party and not something that was out there on social media or anything else. But they were fun parties, I'll tell you that.
Well, speaking of a fun party, I was honored to be invited to your party when you left the White House, or the party that the president and first lady hosted to celebrate your departure. Somehow that didn't come out right. But a legendary thing took place there, Lee. I'm not sure.
I saw.
You were there?
Yes.
You saw too? Well, then you can confirm that President Obama, not the greatest dancer, according to his wife, broke into dance.
I used to, after photo lines, during the holidays, I would do the Jeremy dance.
Oh.
And the president got to the point that he'd say, "Are you going to do your dance?
Can
Are
you
going to
do
your
right
dance?"
Now on radio?
No, it's god awful.
Oh, okay.
I mean, he said to me one time, he goes, "You know, I don't want to be rude or, but for a gay man, you're really a horrible dancer." And I said to him, "You know, Mr. President, even if I was a straight guy, I'd be a horrible dancer. I mean, I know it's bad." But at my going away party, at the end of his remarks, he said, "Okay, so everyone, you know about the Jeremy dance. We're going to do the Jeremy dance." And he and I did the dance. And Pete Sosa took one of the photo of it. And that end of that year, it became one of the favorite photos of the year. So it was fun. And I don't know how you got invited to that.
Well, I snuck in. I read Lee's chapter on how you sneak into the White House. So, Lee, these state dinners and the state arrivals are always the most amazing thing to be included. Now, you were there for Prince Charles and Camilla right after they got married. Can you tell us about that?
It was very sweet because they were like newlyweds, you know, they were blooming and lovely and happy to be there. And it was a wonderful experience to work with the British Embassy and their staff to be organized for them. And I remember we had a meeting with the people from the prince's staff, and they gave me a list of preferences, which is common. It happens for every head of state. And it's obviously things like if they're allergic to shellfish, you want to know about that. But this was more than that. And this was just things they liked and didn't like. And it ran to about 7 pages, single spaced.
Perfect, if you can get away with it. That wasn't in the Crown.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to tell you, dealing with state dinners, dealing with the other countries was often like dealing with children. I mean, everything had to be equal. If they saw some, if one country saw that another country got certain things done, an arrival ceremony, and they wanted the same, you were dealing with the representatives of that country, but it was a lot like dealing with kids.
Yeah, and also that's when the true culture clashes happen, when you're anticipating a state visit and you're meeting with these other delegations and setting up the event, because different cultures have different ways of negotiating. And, you know, we'd sit down with the Australians and we'd go through the whole event in an hour, and it was, you know, good day, mate, this is easy, we'll do that, whatever you like. And then maybe the Chinese delegation comes and their concept is completely antagonistic. And we'd say, you know, we'd like to suggest that your president arrive at 10 a.m. and they'd say he will arrive at 10:15. And we'd say, well, it's really just a matter of you waiting that much longer at Blair House. And it was simply they wanted it to be what they wanted. It didn't matter exactly what it was. And so that was much more difficult. When we would do walkthroughs with the Chinese, I remember one of the staffers from the Chinese government going into the East Room and starting to try to pull the curtains closed because they knew there would be protesters in Lafayette Square and they didn't want their president to see it. And the chief usher went through the roof and he raced over and said, what are you doing? Take your hands off those. You know, and we kind of smoothed it over and explained that in America, you know, the curtains stay open. Mm-hmm. And so they were constantly.
And you can't really touch anything. You're not supposed to move anything at the White House, right?
No.
They're very strict. Because
it's a museum, too, you know.
Mm-hmm. By the way, the current president trashed the White House a couple times and said that it was. Made it sound like it was kind of dirty and not 100%. Was that your experience?
No. I thought that the White House was, I never thought of it as dirty. I mean, even after a party, they were so quick to come in, you know, like ants came in and cleaned up. Now, in all fairness, it is an old house and houses need constant repair. And that's just part of a home. But I thought it was really beautiful. And I thought the quarters, what I used to call the apartment above the museum, the living quarters was really spectacular.
The apartment above the museum. How much time did you spend up there? Tell me what it's like.
Oh, Tammy, you know what it's like. You've been up there from one administration
you know
to
what?
The other.
The Bushes let media people upstairs. Yeah. And then you guys said, no, 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 we don't want them up
there.
Forget President Trump is not going to even let us on the first floor, right?
Yeah.
And what about the third floor? Because I'm leading up to something here. What about the Truman Balcony? I think we need to have a little chat about that, Jeremy.
I'll say the Truman Balcony is the most beautiful. Being on the Truman Balcony, I think, gives the most beautiful view of D.C. I think it's just magical.
Well, Lee, I know you've been up there, but the rest of America gets to see that view through Shonda Rhimes' show Scandal. And as someone who works on Veep, very unhappy to see that Shonda got upstairs to get some pictures and replicate it. But Veep, we're still on the first floor. I guess that makes sense because we're a comedy and they're drama.
Well, you should go up to the floor above that because the Truman Balcony is on the family residence, but the floor above has 10 bedrooms and this very beautiful solarium that you can get a great view of the bar of the W from.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so you mean when I'm at the bar, the W, with my binoculars?
Wave.
They're waving over like, look at those fools.
The other thing is on like July 4th, we would go to the roof and watch the fireworks from the roof. And to be standing up there with all these Secret Service agents that have rifles that are looking every direction, you realize how much security there is. But it was also just amazing to be up there and looking out at the fireworks from there. It was really like, this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
Yeah, you never really get a true sense of how well-protected the White House is until there's some kind of an emergency. I remember there was a plane that got within airspace. It was restricted at one point after I started working there, and they were evacuating us because it was only a minute out. Of course, it was harmless. It was some man who was lost or something. But in those seconds, people were popping out of everywhere, both inside and outside, in full, you know, SWAT gear. So there's a lot going on there. It's well protected.
Listen, let's get back to the book, because I think what you're doing is extraordinary. Treating people well, The Extraordinary Power of Civility at Work and in Life. I mean, you're in these troubling times, mm-hmm. no matter what political party you're with, each one of you is from a different party. People are really trying to, whether you're in Washington or anywhere around the world, trying to make their lives better. And you two are out there trying to help them do it. Lee, that's extraordinary. Good for you.
Well, thank you. I mean, I think we had similar experiences, even though we come from different administrations. And we saw that making that little extra effort, trying to smooth things over, get the best possible result, made people respond in kind. And it's actually quite self-interested because it just makes your life easier. It takes the stress out of a situation and it makes you feel better about yourself.
Jeremy, so give me an example.
A good example of treating someone well, I have no idea how to do that.
Lee wrote that part of the book.
I wrote the examples of what goes wrong. But, it was usually things like people that had hurt feelings that they weren't there, or sometimes you're working with someone and they're difficult, and if you take a moment instead of reacting, and I've in my past reacted, and I really realize that if you step back and take a breath and allow the person to say if there's something wrong or, you know, give you some information, it really helps. And I really saw that when I went to the White House, it was 2 years into the administration. There were some people that had already been there. They had been there their 2 years and 2 years in the campaign. And some were kind of tired. And I said, hey, guys, we get to come here every day. We get to work with the president and first lady daily. And we don't have to decide who to bomb or if we're going to invade somewhere. We should be the happiest people on earth and stealing from Disney. So I think one of the things was trying to keep its sense of humor and keep it light, not belittling the seriousness of what we were doing, but not to take ourselves too serious.
And here's a radical idea. Things are not always about us. You know, when people misbehave, you don't realize that maybe they're having a bad day. Maybe they're really worried about money. Someone in their family is sick. They're just not paying attention, and it's not personal to you. And when you stop taking everything so personally, life gets easier.
The other thing that you say, Lee, which is really interesting, is just when people would come to the White House, you just comment on a tie or a look their kid or something.
Right. Just something positive to put them at ease and make them feel like they're doing okay, because people are always nervous to come to the White House. But people are nervous to go to work every day. They're nervous at school. So there's a lot of easing that can be done to make people feel better wherever you are.
And what about your advice for millennials? I like that you guys talked to my daughter, but you gave her some really good advice about young people. And, you know, the interesting thing is you're dealing with, you know, really older people, right? Who've mm-hmm. had, you know, very public lives to young people, especially in the Easter egg role and all that. What's your advice for millennials?
To social media and your phone are important. Your life's in there, usually every phone number. No one remembers phone numbers anymore. But take a step away from it. Don't have it. I've gone to dinner with people and they're on their phone. And it got to the point that I thought, well, I feel like an outsider for not pulling my phone out. Sometimes there's a true situation where you have to check. But overall, just setting it down and giving the respect or the time to yourself is really good, and to have a conversation. When we were writing this, I went to a restaurant and I looked around and I said to my friend, I said, look, at those tables, all those tables, everyone's on their phone, and I bet they're not talking to each other, you know, it's become a culture of that, and that's a new reality, but you've got to give it some a rest.
Right. I mean, we all spend more hours online than is probably healthy, and you have to remember that there is a person at the other end, whether it's Insta or Facebook or an email, and treat them with the same respect you would if they were standing in front of you.
Okay, hold on. I want to get a picture for my Instagram feed.
That was good.
Thank you. Lee Berman, Jeremy Bernard. The book is Treating People Well, The Extraordinary Power of Civility at Work and in life, and I was thrilled to meet your publisher, who said to me they are so proud of this book, and we're proud of you. You're great representatives of Washington. Thanks for being with us on Washington Insider.
This was fun. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you.